Hello and welcome, everybody, to the Pick Six Podcast. Sam McKeown along with Tom Chattel and Evan Bland. We are going to get right into it and start with this. What are your breakfast menus for Boulder? We have six new kickoff times. We didn't know those before today. Now we do know those. And hello, everyone. Evan, Tom, 10 a.m. kickoff, Colorado. What do you think?
Yes, Sam, I think it's probably not going over well in Boulder. I'm sure they wanted for the first Deion Sanders home game, the prime kickoff on TV to have everybody juiced up and ready to go.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean they won't be juiced up at 9 a.m.
Maybe they won't go to bed.
But yeah, in that town, you never know. But they certainly it's just a proven fact. It's harder to get up. We've seen this in Lincoln. It's hard to get the crowd on, you know, at a peak form when it's 11 a.m. But it's still morning, and Deion is going to have to get his team ready, and so will Matt Rhule. But I just think it does it play into Nebraska's favor? I don't know. Maybe not. But the atmosphere probably going to be at least half red. That's what we think. You never know. I think it might just do that. But I guess we've had this a couple times, and the last time I remember 11 a.m. out there was the day before Bill Callahan got fired, because we all drove to the airport. We filed our stories and were able to get on the flight back to Omaha in time to cover the press conference the next day. And as I recall, Colorado won that game big.
So 65-51.
In the snow.
The day played Joe Gans, for some reason, waited to play Joe Gans until the very end. And Joe Gans had a good game, as I recall. But anyway, so 11 a.m., 10 a.m., does it favor either one? I don't know. It doesn't favor the Colorado crowd. And that's just my opinion.
Joe Gans threw for 484 yards that day. Nebraska led 35-24 at half. A lot of people don't remember that part of it, but they did. And then Jimmy Smith had an interception return, and there it went. And they lost 65-51. Iowa is a 11 a.m. kick. It's on CBS. It'll be the first time that Nebraska is on CBS since the 2009 Gator Bowl, unless there's another game in there, but I don't know that there will be.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important for that game to be on national TV. A couple of different times the Big Ten Network has snagged it, and I think Nebraska was getting maybe a little tired of that. And so now they're going to have two national games on Black Friday, one in the morning, one at night, and an NFL game broadcast by someone, probably Amazon Prime, in the middle. The night game is Penn State at Michigan State. Oh, my God. And that's going to be cold. The day game is Nebraska-Iowa.
And that's going to be cold.
It will.
Not as cold as the Nittany's.
Oh, man. That's brutal. That's going to be tough.
Yeah.
I felt like as much as the kickoff times, this was about, like, how do you keep all your streaming services and your networks straight? We're kind of in that weird middle ground before some of these contracts run out. You know, there's this weird overlap period. So you've got CBS, you've got Fox, you know, there's the speculation that maybe the Peacock would pick up Michigan at Nebraska in the middle of the season. So, like, you know, if you're not going to the game, like, this is a good time to get all your passwords in order for your streaming services and your cable, because, my goodness, you know, they're going to be on, but, like, you might have to work to find where they're going to be on. And I thought that was what, you know, you talk about Colorado at 10 a.m. I think it's just a reminder that, like, that's what happens when you take the money. They dictate when the TV people dictate when kickoff is.
I really sense a trend forming here, and I hope I'm wrong. For years and years, the networks didn't care about Black Friday. Now all of a sudden, we've got a night game and their Big Ten game at night. We've got an NFL game. That's the first Friday. Thanksgiving is one day for NFL. They have three games, right?
Yeah.
Now they want to have one on Friday.
Yep.
it's are we going to oversaturate Black Friday, and what will that do to Nebraska's? Well, if it's not special anymore, will Huskers want to have that game on that day? I think they probably will, but if there's going to be, they're going to add more games, and there's going to be an NFL game, it's going to overshadow everything. I just wonder the future of that date.
Yeah, me too. I think if you go, if you're the first game in the morning, which they will be, they'll probably be competing against Texas, Kansas, or something. But you're before the NFL game. I can't remember what the NFL game is that day. I can't imagine.
I think it's Dolphins Jets. Well, I think.
And if the Jets are good, that's a great game.
Well, they're going to be good.
You would think.
And so is Miami if everybody's healthy. But just saying, it's NFL. People just watch NFL just because it's on.
I just watch the NFL.
So it's weird. We'll see what the ratings are, the trends. People shop early, you know, watch NFL, and go shopping again. Do they? You know, Nebraska-Iowa ratings will only be as good as now the game itself,
right?
And are the two teams any good? Are they worth watching? Is a game mean anything? Besides the Corn Bowl, you know, but everybody will watch Penn State, Michigan State. They'll all watch that. I mean, that's why that's on at night. Nebraska kind of has to get back up there again, and I just wonder. I hope this isn't a thing where NFL, oh, we love this so much, we're going to have two NFL games now. We'll have one at night, and we'll go Thursday, we'll go Friday, we'll go, you know, and just like, ah. So, yeah, the Thanksgiving day and the day after Thanksgiving used to be Nebraska-Oklahoma territory.
Yep.
Then Nebraska-Colorado. Then Nebraska-Iowa.
And that's pretty much it. Yeah. And now they've added, they've larded up the day.
But the NFL thing, that's what really worries me. And also the second Big Ten game. So, but that's where we are. Realignment, college football. Traditions, they go away all the time. We're living in a Steve Peterson world. Remember he said, things don't last forever. Yeah, I guess they didn't.
So Nebraska's opening game is at 7 p.m. against Minnesota on Fox. That's a pretty plum. That could have easily been FS1. It's not. Minnesota-Nebraska doesn't move my needle if I were not a Nebraska beat reporter. But Minnesota-Nebraska on Fox Thursday night, that's a pretty good deal. That's a lot of exposure for Nebraska in the first 2 weeks. Brian Fisher, who I think works for CBS Sports, I can't remember who he works for, he had a tweet yesterday that this is the percentage of college football games on streaming, which is Peacock, Amazon, ESPN+, broadcast and cable through week three in 2023. 25% of the SEC's games are going to be streamed. That's on ESPN+. Just 8% of the Big Ten's games will. 25% versus 8%.
And guess who's going to be streamed a lot? The Big 12.
The Big 12's number here is 39%. And then 22% is on OTA, which is over-the-air broadcast, and 39% of the Big 12 is on cable. With the Big 10, it's 8, 32, and 60. The reason that cable number is high, and it's high for everybody, is because of BTN. BTN controls, well, frankly, all the inventory. The Pac-12 is 3% streaming, 23%. 23% broadcast and 74% cable, and most of that's the Pac-12 network, which unless I have Spectrum, I have the second sports pack tier. I got to go to the third and get the tennis channel and some other shit, and then I get the Pac-12 network. So I don't go to the third tier. I'm at like the second tier. I get the ACC network on the second tier. I don't get Pac-12. So interesting information. 7 o'clock for Minnesota, then 6 p.m. for the Northern Illinois game. That's common. They want a night game in September for official visits. That's the one that Nebraska is going to get, so they should have a big official visit weekend during their home opener. And then your Louisiana Tech game will probably be 11, and then we don't know what Michigan's going to be. That's the game at the end of the month. if I was going to be a betting man, I would bet that game ends up on NBC. Because what NBC has already shown is they want to have, so they pre-scheduled, I think, five teams on the NBC schedule. Those teams are Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan State, and then that, you know, dog fart Maryland game that they have no choice but to put on TV because so many of their games that day are horrible. They don't have any choice. So those are the five teams that they've pre-scheduled. It's obvious that they want to have Michigan on as many times as they can. They'll never get the Michigan-Ohio State game, so they've got to find a way to get Michigan on their network. I'm sure that the league will try to be amenable to that. This is going to be tricky, guys, because you really have CBS, NBC, Fox, and then BTN. And you have to try to satiate all, and then FS1 is just whatever. But those four are all competing for inventory, and the BTN is going to get some good games because they control the inventory. So it's going to be a tricky dance to try to figure out how you're going to take care of NBC and how you're going to take care of CBS when they're going to be competing for each other
at
all times.
That's a great problem to have for Nebraska.
It is. It is. For Nebraska, it is a
great problem to have. Yes. Because I certainly did not see it coming. Others smarter than I did, but getting out of ESPN was a hell of a move by
why is that?
The Big Ten. Because ESPN's financially strapped. Mm-hmm. They're cutting. They're going to put more games on ESPN Plus. That's where that's going.
And they'll have their announcers in a studio in Bristol.
They'll take care of the SEC, mm-hmm. but I don't think they're going to take care of the Big 12. Enough for Cincinnati versus KU or Iowa State or whatever. You know, I'm sorry, my Iowa State buddy out there who thinks I criticize him, I'm sorry. Whoever, UConn. UConn is coming into the Big 12. Good God, why? I don't know. But, or maybe, I hope they don't. But I'm just saying.
Iowa State at Cincinnati.
The Big 12, well, it's becoming a group of five league.
It is.
Because they've added a group of five, and they're going to bring Colorado in. And
UConn. Colorado at Cincinnati.
I mean, anyway, the BYU will be fun for those people. Until they actually play them when they find out what they're all about. But
Iowa State at BYU, live from Provo.
Yeah, on ESPN Plus.
That's right.
But the Big Ten, you got three major networks. It's a hell of a Big Ten network right in there, too. You're going to be somewhere good every week. Right. But getting rid of ESPN, who knew? I wonder about stuff like ESPN Game Day. What's that going to turn into? You know?
That's a great question.
The one guy left, the bear. The
your boy, guy. Yeah.
He's going to Fox, right?
Fox.
Well, he got out before, you know, all of his layoffs and stuff. So it's a weird situation in the ESPN. The future is murky, and the Big Ten is in great shape. So kudos to Kevin Warren. I don't know what kind of contract mess you left, but the bottom line was you set him up pretty good.
Hmm. Yeah, it's going to be really, really interesting to see. If I had to, like, Nebraska's, you make a great point about this being good for Nebraska. One network, Nebraska's going to end up on one of those networks more than it ends up on another. If I had to play a hunch, it'll be CBS over NBC.
Fine.
I don't think NBC has what you would call seasoned people in those roles. I think they've put all of their energy toward the NFL, and so I don't think they're going to respect Nebraska's historic whatever.
Watch the NBC Notre Dame connection. You watch that. Michigan Notre Dame has a history. They might start. They might latch on to some of these Big Ten teams that are going to play. They want to play. Have them play Notre Dame.
Right.
That could be a thing in the future where that's how Notre Dame joins the Big Ten, or there's a transition. They join the Big Ten network. They already belong to it because they're NBC also. So there's a way, I think, for the new Big Ten commissioner, the TV commissioner, the MLB. Hopefully he'll do baseball. There's a way for him to get Notre Dame in that way. So I'm just throwing that out there.
That's a good point.
But if you're talking about who NBC would want, maybe they would want teams that will play Notre Dame eventually or have already. So anyway,
that's a good point. Let's move to recruiting. Well, let's remind people. So the night game at Illinois, Friday night. I think that's a 7 p.m. tip kick on FS1, and then they've got a Purdue game at home, which I think is their homecoming game. And that's either, and the times are notable there. I think it's like 12, 3:30 or 4, and those are Eastern times or something like that. Basically, those times are, one of these games is going to be streamed on Peacock, and it could be that one, or it could be a CBS mid-afternoon game. I think it was 12, 2:30 or 3. 2:30 is CBS. 3 p.m. is going to be, you know, like potentially a Peacock streaming, or you'll have the noon game, which will be like BTN or something like that. So somewhere this season, they're going to get a game streamed. It's going to be on Peacock. So if you like The Office, you already have Peacock, and you'll just get to watch a Nebraska football or Nebraska basketball game on top of it. Okay, let's move to recruiting. They've got 8 guys coming in this weekend. One of those guys is local. That's Caleb Pyfrom, the Omaha Central offensive lineman. Good player. Still developing as a player. Has Nebraska in his top group. Clearly, he's visited Nebraska already several times. He's now an official visitor. He will go to Minnesota and Illinois later this month. And he's still kicking the tires on Missouri, Penn State, and Iowa. So he's coming this weekend. There's a story already up on our website about Caleb Pyfrom and what he likes about Nebraska. One interesting note from his interview with me is he said that Matt Rhule and PJ Fleck are similar. And guess what? They are.
He's right.
They are similar. People should not take that as a criticism of Matt Rhule. I think there are differences between the two guys, and they are the differences that are encapsulated in the differences between a person who grew up where Matt Rhule did and PJ Fleck, who grew up kind of in the Midwest. They're different people, but they work on some of the same stuff. I mean, they both like branding. Maybe nobody likes branding more than PJ Fleck, but they both kind of like that branding stuff, you know? And so they're not that dissimilar. And I don't think it would break anybody's heart if Nebraska had a program that was winning at Minnesota's clip with maybe the personality dialed down just a little from where PJ Fleck has it. So that's one of the visitors. But here are the rest. Almost all defensive players. There's one exception to that rule. But Peyton Morgan, a safety out of Pflugerville, Texas. Mario Buford, the younger brother of Marquise Buford. Dante Carter, who comes from the same high school as Tommy Armstrong. One step. Carlon Jones, this is a big one, from Bay City, Texas, same school as Bryce Turner. He's going to be important. They want him in the class. And he had a huge year last year, comically. Had 102 tackles, 13 sacks. William Speedy Nettles, who is from Dallas Christian School. Amari Sanders, really interesting player from Gulliver Prep in Miami. And Ja'Cory Barney, who is a speedy, undersized receiver, 6 foot, 160, from Miami Palmetto. Evan, does any of that jump out at you?
The Mario Buford one does. I mean, I remember, was it 2 summers ago now? He was at the Friday Night Lights camp, and all the current Huskers were celebrating him. He had a big day there in front of a few thousand at Memorial Stadium. Like, that's a guy that you would think Nebraska should get. I mean, he's a 4-star, legitimately a national recruit. And he's been to Nebraska many times. You mentioned his connection with his brother Marquise. Like, to me, that's a guy that you watch and you look at his recruiting process. I know for a while Oregon was in on it. I think Michigan State maybe is a factor too.
Michigan State and Penn State are going to get visits from him, and Michigan State's serious.
Okay.
And Penn State's now come on a little bit. Penn State produces good defensive backs.
Like, I just think that's an interesting one to watch. One, because of the connection that he has to Nebraska, but then I think that's an early case study in what Evan Cooper can do as a secondary coach, and bring in a guy who already has some interest. Can you close the deal on that? I mean, I think that's the one that stands out to me. I mean, you mentioned Pyfrom as the in-state guy, and then you have, you know, a big Texas flavor, a lot of skill positions, a lot of speed. And, you know, June is such an interesting time, right? Because I think you put so much focus in the spring and getting guys in for these unofficial kind of tent pole weekends, and then everyone looks ahead to the fall for those in-season officials. But like, this is the month where, to your point earlier, like, if you have a good official in June, you can get commits out of that right away. You can get guys to cancel officials later in the month and say, I want to be here.
That's exactly.
Especially on the front end of June when you have so many visits lined up. If you can make a good impression, it's a sneaky big time in the recruiting calendar, I think, that goes under the radar oftentimes.
It's a good point. You know, I think the guy that might be the guy to look at there would be Ja'Cory Barney, the receiver out of Miami. Here's why. I'll just say this. The reason that I mention that is because if a kid from Miami comes up to Nebraska to visit, they're really interested.
Mm-hmm.
What they're interested in? Leaving Miami.
Getting out of Florida. Yeah.
Leaving Miami.
Sure.
Because if you want to go to Miami, then you either go to Miami or you go over to South Florida or you go to Central Florida or you go over to Florida Atlantic. If you want to stay in the area, there's a lot of schools you can go to, and you can get to the NFL from every one of them. And so you've got some receivers at FIU and FAU that are better than the guys Nebraska got because they didn't get an offer from Miami, and they didn't want to leave. They decided that they wanted to play their football in the area.
Mm-hmm.
So there's plenty of options in the state of Florida if that's where you want to be. If you decide that you're going to start visiting elsewhere and you're going to go out, there's a pretty darn good chance that you want to leave. Now, for people that have listened to this show over the years, we've talked about the schools that recruit Miami really heavily. I'll then reiterate that again. Indiana recruits Miami really heavily.
Mm-hmm.
Louisville recruits Miami heavily. Michigan kicks the tires in there. They're more interested in national recruiting, but they'll do a little bit in Miami. Ohio State will go get an elite player from the area. Georgia Tech will recruit the area. Obviously, Miami will recruit the area. But there are generally schools, and you'll see the offer lists. You'll see Louisville. You'll see Indiana. Louisville's gotten its two best players in the last 20 years from Miami. That would be Teddy Bridgewater and Lamar Jackson. And so, like, they recruit that area. Those schools are not necessarily high on Ja'Cory Barney's list. I think Nebraska's going to get that commit. Now, I don't know exactly when, but I think there's a good chance. There's usually tells. You don't even have to necessarily have followed the kid's recruiting and say, if this kid's visiting and he doesn't have Louisville and Indiana, and you know Pittsburgh recruits Miami because the coach there likes players from the area.
Mm-hmm.
So you just pay attention to the schools that are sort of on the kid's radar. So I like Barney to Nebraska. As you look through the other list, look, Buford, what's interesting there is Michigan State's really serious about getting him. They've recruited him just as hard as Nebraska. And Penn State, which typically when Nebraska goes head-to-head with Penn State, when Penn State goes head-to-head with almost anybody but Ohio State and Michigan, Penn State wins. They're a good recruiting program. James Franklin does a really good job up there. So if Nebraska is able to beat Michigan State and Penn State for Mario Buford for a defensive back, that's a feather in their cap. I don't know if they'll be able to do it. Peyton Morgan is from down there. He's an interesting player, kind of a taller guy, leaner. And then Dante Carter, they might have a better chance with him at this point than Peyton Morgan, but I know Morgan is excited to come up here and look at it. Speedy Nettles, I don't know if he is a B-list guy or not, but he's up here. I think that Mario Buford and Amari Sanders, who's really interesting, are probably higher on the list, but I don't know that for sure. And it's possible that Speedy Nettles is up there. He's a very tall and lean, sort of like Tamon Lineham. Amari Sanders is even more so like that. Now, if you look at his offer list, you're going to see Louisville. So Louisville is the other school that's really recruiting him hard. Sanders, to me, would be a nice get. I don't know. The other thing that's going to happen, and I was talking on the radio earlier today about this, is I think Nebraska is going to have a challenge in keeping this class where they seem to want it, which is in like the low 20s. And by the way, like a low 20s is a small class. 25 is regular, 28 is large. So anything below 22 or so, and you're in kind of the lower range. Well, if you want to get in the 20 range, that's fine. But you may find that you've got 35 guys or 30 guys that you really like who also might come to your program. And if you only get to pick 20 of those, not easy.
That's a good point. I mean,
they decided to take a big high school class right out of the chute.
They did, and they whittled it down. We don't even really know exactly what their scholarship numbers are right now because
they
haven't
whittled down the scholarship class, though. Like the scholarship, the guys that they just took in this class, I guarantee you they're on scholarship.
Yes, but what I'm saying is, like, we don't know what exactly their scholarship situation is overall because we don't know who's taking the retirement package, and You know, they just haven't made that sort of thing public yet.
There's conversations about in-kind, you know, payments with through NIL, and that's fine. I could see there being a couple guys who might be on that, but it's not that simple. And
no, it's not.
And it's kind of a pain in the butt because if you have to pay for your college and you don't do that through a loan, then you have to go pay for your college. Like, a lot of these athletes on scholarship, it's just, you know, the numbers work out to where it gets paid. You don't have to put it through all the logistics. Like, if you get paid NIL money, right, you don't actually have to give that to the university. You can give it to whatever you want. You can give it to a car. You can give it to whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You can take a loan in theory. So, like, there's a lot of different things that are a little bit different between a scholarship and NIL payments. Anyway, they took this really big class right out of the chute.
Mm-hmm.
In Mike's, what I have seen in the past is when coaches do that, they better be real darn sure that the guys that they take out of the chute want to stick around. And what we saw in the Scott Frost class, that didn't happen.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, you're right. Like, we've talked about it on the show before. Like, it seems to me like one of the inefficiencies or advantages maybe that Nebraska can have under Rule is retaining guys more. And I'll be curious how that plays out. But, you know, we've talked about branding. They're big culturally. They have their, you know, stuff all the time, all sorts of team events. You hear players that love the program. Like, I think there's a competitive advantage to doing the things that keep players in your program. Whether that happens under Matt Rule at Nebraska, I don't know.
That's a good point.
But it seems like that's a priority. So, you know, it's hard. How do you manage a roster when you don't know on a whim who's going to enter the portal? Like, how do you do that? I think one way that you do that was what they just did, which is like being okay, being confident enough in your evaluation process to say, if we got to take some guys in December or January based on their senior film and based on like how we have confidence in our own assessment capabilities, then they'll do that. So, I mean, we'll see how that plays out. You can't probably live that way consistently, but I think if you keep a few open spots, like, that's not the worst thing in the world either.
No, it's not. I mean, and it does mean that you sign kind of a smaller class and then you kind of decide between December and February, do we want to add a few more high school players? That's kind of what they did in this cycle. They got DeAndre Barnes late and a few other players. I think Sua Lefetu was a later guy that committed later.
Yeah, Jeremiah Charles and Ismael Smith Flores, those kind of guys.
Well, I like Jeremiah Charles. Yeah. I think he could be one of the new guys that jumps out right away.
But that's the kind of guy that they got late. And I think that they feel like they could get late every year if they had to.
That's a good point. That's a good way to put it. Because if you sign a class in late December, and then you all of your guys have to declare that they're going to transfer by what, January 10th?
Yeah, mid-January, yep.
That's a good point.
And they have enough connections and relationships that they can fill that on the back end with high upside project types. You know, hopefully you don't need those guys to contribute right away. But I think if you're a developmental program, that's an advantage that you have on the back end.
That's a really good point. I hadn't thought of it that way. Yeah. Mm. So because you're going to lose like 10 guys a year, the transfer portal.
It's just going to happen. Yeah.
It's going to happen. And then those are scholarships that free up for February.
That's right.
That's thinking.
Well, that's Matt Rule's thinking. I'm just talking.
That's a good thinking. Like, I get that. That makes more sense.
Mm.
You sign maybe 19, but you keep 4 or 5 back. Yeah. I like that. I think they're going to get a couple of commits eventually out of this weekend. I do think Pyfrom will land at Nebraska, if not Minnesota. I do think they're going to get Barney.
Do you think we've talked about before about are you concerned, are you not concerned with where they are from a recruiting perspective? Is this a big weekend to assuage any worries about where they are from a recruiting perspective? Or like at what point do you start getting concerned with where they are or get excited about where they are?
If by the end of June they haven't added some certain names, then I would think, you know, you're going into the fall. And basically, if you haven't added certain kids by the end of June/early July, basically what those kids are saying is, we want to see it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're kind of having a, you know, it's kind of a crapshoot. Because if you go 9-3, well, then all of a sudden you got a bunch of guys that might be interested. You know, you never know. But if you go 3-9 or 4-8, maybe some of these guys aren't as interested. So, like Carter Nelson. Carter Nelson's going to visit at the end of the month. We'll talk about it later. But if Carter Nelson isn't sold on Nebraska by July 5th, and he needs to see more, well, then you're just going into the season and you're trying to figure out what the heck you want to do. It's kind of the same with Caleb Pyfrom. Now, Pyfrom says he wants to take the thing out of ways, but you either know or you don't. I believe, anyway, in a recruiting thing, if you've taken your official visit and you're still not sure, what you're really doing is saying, I don't really know if these teams are for me.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. I think by the end of June, early July, they're at 8 commits now, or 7. I think 8. I think they'll be at 13 or 14. Because some of these guys are going to want to get in the boat. Because I think they're pretty good recruiters.
Yeah.
I think Barney will be in by then. I don't know about Pyfrom, but I think he might be. I think this kid Jones, I think they're going to try to get that done. He's got 3 more visits after this, but he may shut it down quick. Mario Buford?
Maybe.
I think so, but you know. Carter Nelson. That gets you to 12 right there.
Okay.
And then who else are we talking about? I'm sure they'd love to get Isaiah McMorris, but the kids in Omaha are not easy. Devon Hall? I don't know. So we'll talk more about it as the weeks go on, but that's where we're at recruiting right now. Okay, baseball. Nebraska ended its season in the Big Ten tournament. Great stuff. You know, your story about the first loss to Maryland was just terrific. Wild game.
It was.
Emotional. You know, Maryland's got some attitude to it. I like that, actually, about them. But they fell short. They lost to the best team in the league twice in terrific games, and they didn't leave themselves any wiggle room going into the Big Ten tournament, so they had to beat that team, and they weren't able to do it. So their mm-hmm. season is over. How would you recap it? And now already there's been a lot of movement on the roster.
You're right. Yeah, multiple transfer portal departures. I'm sure the additions will come in the weeks ahead. But it's a weird year. It's split the difference from the last 2 years. The 21 season, when you make a regional and you're a win away from the Supers and everybody's thrilled with how it went, to 2022 when you don't even make the Big Ten tournament. And they hit the middle ground this year. They were middle of the pack seed. They won a couple games, got people a little bit excited. They were, you know, a couple pitches away from potentially playing for the Big Ten title. And I told you guys last week, I thought they would win if their stars played like stars. And I think we saw, you know, Bryce Matthews was hurt. He said as much after the tournament ended. You know, Max Anderson hit well for average. If that home run on their last at bat of the season goes a few more feet, they walk off Maryland, and who knows how the rest of that day and that tournament plays out. But they have some interesting decisions to make. I'm going to write about this for this weekend. But you know, I asked Will Bolt afterwards. You know, because he has said before he knows what it looks like. Will Bolt's seen. He's been on regional teams. He's been on teams that have made the College World Series. He often says he knows what it looks like, and I asked him how close to what it should look like did this team look like, and he said 5 games in the regular season from being in a situation where they have no wiggle room to being in a spot where they don't have to win the tournament to be able to make a regional. He said 5 games was the difference, and I went back and looked at some of that, and he's right. Like, if they had won 5 games and say they had won that kooky tie against San Diego to start the year, they would have won 39 games. They still got unlucky with their non-conference season, but they would have been right there in the mix to
be
in
their RPI. Do you think?
It's hard to say. I mean, they finished at 97 in the regular season. If you flip 5, 50s, maybe. It depends on which ones you flip.
Well, let's say you flip the UNO and the Creighton and the.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't help you. It doesn't ding you, but it doesn't
that
boost
hurts you when
you
lose those.
Oh, it hurts you big time. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And so you know. I don't know, but the point is, like, that's how thin the line is in college baseball, especially when you don't give yourself a lot of margin for error with your schedule. And the Big Ten, we all know how the Big Ten is in terms of being weak on your schedule and all that. But I'll be interested to see how they address what happened this year, because the line was not that big between what season they just had and being an at-large team. It really wasn't. You're going to have to address pitching. You're losing your stars, certainly, in the lineup. To me, this was not a season where you blow it up afterwards. But I'll be curious to see what they think, especially just in the wake of a season where they did feel like they could make a regional.
Yeah, I don't know if you blow it up, but you certainly don't bring it all back either. You've got to make some changes.
You mentioned Rob Childress in your first down and second guesses.
Yeah. Where is he? If he's on the staff, I mean, what is he doing? I guess he's helping bring transfers in or something. Jeff Christie, I'm not saying he's the problem, but is he the solution? I don't see him as that either, necessarily. What they're doing is not good enough, and so they've got to get better. Rob Childress, maybe he's not in the mood to do this anymore, but the guy was like Darth Vader when he was in Nebraska. He was like Clint Eastwood walking out to the mound. Right. The pitcher was like, they were nervous. Well, my God, what's he going to do to me? I mean, it was like Clint Eastwood walking out of the saloon into the main street. What's he going to do?
Right.
He was a badass. As a head coach, I think he maybe had to tone that down a little bit. But he was all about attitude and the culture. And he fit Van Horn perfectly. And the way and Will Bolt right in there. John Cole, all those guys. If you got him, use him. And I don't much saying he's the pitching coach, but maybe there's something else he could be doing. And because they're too up and down. They need to be. I thought after the season 2 years ago, I know that they had a certain group of players. They had better pitching. I thought the program would go like this, and it hasn't. It hasn't. They haven't really built on that year 2 years ago. I think in some ways they have. It's just a frustrating year because they won 6 out of 8 Big Ten series. They finished fourth. They were probably right there. I don't know if they're on the bubble. They got some bad breaks in our conference. But they just didn't do enough in some of the games where you have to win those games. And I don't know, Evan. I see it as maybe did they rely too much on the home run? Did they? I always thought Will Bolt's teams would scrap and claw for every little thing, every game. And did they sometimes sit back and wait for the home run too much? I don't know. I don't know the answer to these things.
Yeah, I mean, they probably got a little swing heavy at times. I mean, if nobody expected they'd hit 97 home runs in the season. Nobody thought that. They went in thinking they were going to actually kind of zig when everyone else zagged. They thought they were going to be more versatile in their offense, but didn't turn out that way. And I think that's kind of part of the reason why it's so disappointing, too, is there's this sense that you wasted All-American seasons from Bryce Matthews and Max Anderson. And you know, you have that kind of production, you know, inarguably one of the top five middle infielders combinations in the country, and you can't make it out of the Big Ten tournament. I think that adds to that disappointment. And on the pitching side, we've talked about this too, but like what's hurt them is they just haven't had that guy, that ace that you just know is going to be out there. He's going to give you 7 innings. They just haven't had it this year. I mean, Emmett Olson's had his moments, and Jace Kaminski has had his moments, and Will Walsh has had his moments. But like none of those guys you would say, yeah, with 100% confidence, they're going to go out and give us a quality start.
Saves your depth.
Saves your depth, sure.
Even if that guy goes 8-5 and his ERA is not 2-3, but it's 3-5. The key is, can you trust a guy to go out there for 7 innings on a Friday night and save the depth? And I think the question, what you're saying is that they didn't have a guy that they always knew was going to go out there and do that.
That's
whether
true.
He won or lost,
sure.
They didn't always know that they had a pitcher who was going to go out there and eat up innings and have a quality start. Maybe you lose the game 4-3 because a guy gave up 4 runs, but damn, and he pitched 7 innings and he threw 95 pitches and all that.
You're competitive.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think that's a really good point. Now, he mentioned to you, and you're going to write this for Sunday, something about positional depth where they could rest guys.
Yeah, just this idea that in the midweek, you don't have to start all your guys all the time. I mean, you look at...
Midweek is where they had their problems.
Well, yeah, exactly. And because you need more depth all around. I think in that moment, my guess, and this is just me, is what he's alluding to, is Bryce Matthews, if they could have given him a midweek day off here or there, and he didn't have to start every single game leading up until the final week of the regular season, maybe he would have been at full strength for the Big Ten tournament. I think that's kind of what you're getting at, is if you can just give him a Tuesday night off, put somebody in that you feel like can be replacement level or give you a spark, see what they can do. They didn't feel like they could do that. Bryce was out there every game. Max didn't miss a game. And I think at the end you could kind of see it. You know, and Bryce said as much. He said, I'm hurt.
I know he's a big guy, but it's just one guy. The rest of the lineup in some of those games. I mean, I just looked at Will Bolt just after some, and you were certainly closer to it than I was in those games, but just the body language was just pulling his hair out, going, what the hell are we doing? Why aren't they responding? I just don't figure, like, he had the... He knew what they were going to do in any given game. I mean, that one week, I think sometimes you can mismanage it a little bit on the schedule. One week they played UNO on a Tuesday. They played like South Dakota State the next night. And then they lost that game. And then I think Minnesota came in and they lost a Friday night game. I mean, of course, that was probably the Nebraska bullpen was the problem there. But
yeah,
I'm just saying it's a lot of games. Five games in a week is a lot. Maybe you don't have to play that all those non-conference games in the middle of the week. I don't know if you're trying to get money, trying to get experience, build depth, but I don't know, Evan. It's but we have all these excuses. They just weren't good enough, and they weren't the same all the time. And
that's true.
I expect Will Bolt's teams to be consistent, and he hasn't found that type of team yet.
And as a quick aside, they're talking about RPI reform across college baseball.
Yeah.
One of the ideas that's being floated by Kansas State's head coach is,
who's coach?
Kansas State.
Yeah, they got screwed.
Yeah, they did. But
they
didn't
get screwed because of the RPI. They got screwed.
They did. They should admit it.
Nebraska kept them out, didn't they?
Well, they had the midweek win over them. That's true.
Yeah.
But they have an idea. He has an idea that maybe is gaining a little traction, that you knock off the bottom five RPI games on your schedule, which would, one, prevent teams from canceling games that could hit their RPIs late in the season.
Right.
But then, two, it's a nod to your Midwestern teams especially, that you just don't have a lot of flexibility in who you play. In Nebraska, if you're trying to find a one-game midweek affair, I mean, you've got Creighton. You can go 3 hours to Kansas State, and you go five to Missouri. Otherwise, you're talking South Dakota State, North Dakota State. You're just sort of – you're in a tough spot where these games can't help you. And they can only hurt you. And so I think that could be something maybe down the line that would help them as well.
I'm going to say something insane, maybe. Why not just cut all the midweek games out?
I like that. I think I don't know if all of them, but there's just too many of them.
Like, it doesn't hurt you. Do they do it because they make money off of it?
No.
I mean, does Nebraska baseball make money on a Tuesday night when UNO comes into town?
No.
Northern Colorado, North Dakota State, why play the games?
Because you're trying to get to the 55 game limit.
Okay.
But you're right. Like, and that was one of my favorite things about the 21 season, honestly. The weird league-only Big Ten season. They only played on the weekends. They did not play in the middle of the week. It sort of had a football rhythm to it, where you had the week to come along. They played those scrimmages. Guys got better sort of behind the scenes.
So you
got
to play 54 games. Well, there's a problem right there. Change that to 50, and people will start doing something different.
Totally agree with that. I mean, I get baseball is a series sport. They have to do all these things. But college basketball, they play two games a week, right?
Right.
Why does baseball have to play four or five? They don't have to do that.
I don't know. I mean, I really don't.
And then that way, if you just played the weekends, everybody would be healthy. You'd be rested. The weekends would be brawls. It'd be great. People get Omaha get mad at me, but they don't need to play UNO three times. They just don't need to do that.
Did they? They played them three times, didn't they?
They did.
Yeah, that's. And I'm not saying that's. John Sanders, because I guess the number used to be higher. John Sanders would play Hastings and Peru State and UNK and Wayne State.
Just college baseball is that. There's been that sport where we just be. They used to play 60 games. I mean, it's just insane.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, maybe if you didn't do that, you could have three weekends of NCAA tournament. Still have your conference
that's
baseball tournament that's so important that you know, nobody seems to go to around the country, except the SEC and Nebraska and Iowa play. One of those conference tournaments are, you know, nobody goes to them. But they have them, that's fine. But cut back the regular season a little bit. You don't have to play.
Start a week or two later. Why do you got to start in mid-February?
Right. And then, but don't play so many games. But now it's not a revenue sport for a lot of the majority of
almost nobody.
SEC schools, like, you know, Missouri's not making money on baseball. No. So you don't need to play all those games. So who's going to be the one to do that and say that? I don't know. But
Sam is.
I mean, maybe you can. Maybe that's how the RPI gets. I mean, Kyle Peterson said, "Blow it up."
Yeah, they got to do something. But irrespective of that, UC Irvine got screwed by the RPI. Kansas State got screwed. There's no argument for Oklahoma before K-State.
That's right.
There
that's
isn't.
Right.
It doesn't exist. They just got screwed because they weren't the CWS finalist last year.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only reason I can think of Oklahoma being in there. Didn't they lose four times to Kansas State?
That's My. Right. Yeah.
I really worry about, I really worry about the sport in a way that, you know, if the Pac-12 is already diminished, if it goes away or whatever. I mean, West Coast baseball right now is really down in the dumps.
It
and they're not coming to the World Series. They're not doing much in regionals. They're not doing much of anything.
Stanford's the only team west of Texas hosting.
Yeah, I mean, so everybody's worried about USC and UCLA coming to the Big Ten baseball. I'm not worried about it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a long issue with West Coast baseball that goes all the way up to the Oakland A's are leaving and they're going to Las Vegas. Like, the only franchise on the West Coast that's really left, truly, is the Dodgers. I mean, the Pods are San Diego is competitive and they have a cool stadium and all the rest, but I just think the kids in California don't play as much baseball. There's a trickle-down effect. I mean, there was probably a time when I was growing up in the early 90s. This is just when you had started writing at the World Herald, Tom. You know, Pepperdine won a national title in 92 or 90.
92.
I mean.
My first year.
That team was stacked, and they were beating stacked teams, and Pepperdine couldn't do that now.
USC was still playing well.
Right,
Fullerton owned everything. I mean.
Right.
I mean,
the kids stayed out there and played baseball. I mean, I remember going to like four Pepperdine games that summer, that CWS. And
you know what?
They were really good. You know, they're just those teams just aren't as good anymore.
You know what's big in California? High school football has never been bigger.
It's getting bigger. Yeah, it's coming back after COVID.
Yeah, it's going to be. But in any case, so I'm curious to see what Coach Bolt does. He's a very popular Husker. He's very popular with people. They want to get behind him.
Oh, no question.
I'm curious to see what he doesn't like this. He hates losing, and he hates not going to the regionals, and he hates losing all these midweek games. I'm just curious what he's going to do about it. Because he is growing as a head coach. Sometimes you got to make tough decisions. And, again, I don't know if Jeff Christie is the answer. Do you get rid of him? But, you know, they need to be the best they can be on that staff and get the most out of it. So, I don't know. It's these are things that's why they pay him the big money. And he's got to make these kind of calls.
Yeah. I'm in agreement.
All right. I like your guys' CWS stuff. We'll see what happens with that. We'll talk a little bit more about that, like maybe the week of, like who's going to win and who will and who won't. We'll see where that goes. Okay, for Tom and Evan, I'm Sam. That is this week's Pick 6 Podcast. Thanks, Husker fans.